Hi, everybody. Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. It's good to have you here with us. It's September 20th, 2023, when we're recording this. Later this afternoon, my wife and I are going to hop on a jet, and we're going to Spain. We're going to go cover my... I'm going to go cover... My wife's coming with me. She's going to watch at the Solheim Cup. I think at Cortesín in the Andalusia region in Spain, kind of southwest Spain. And then we're going to go to Munich in between for a day and a half to go to Oktoberfest, which I'm very excited about. And then we're flying down from Munich to Rome, spending the rest of the time in Rome. I'm going to go to the Ryder Cup and cover that as well. I've never done a foreign team competition of any kind, and I get to in the span of 10 days, which this is probably not going to happen again in the duration of my coverage of golf, barring some kind of horrible disaster or another plague or something like that that shuts down the world and changes the schedule of things. But we had to take advantage of this opportunity. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to kind of take two once-in-a-lifetime trips, thanks to golf, in the last couple of years. And the first was last summer, being able to take my family to Alaska, inspired to go cover the U.S. Senior Women's Am, the last state in the Union, Alaska, to host a USGA championship. And then once I realized that the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup would be played a week apart in the same year, both in Europe, I knew that was something that had to happen. So we say goodbye to our kids today. My in-laws are coming. My sister-in-law is local as well. And we say goodbye to them in the drop-off line for school. And this is the first time, this is life, this is not just golf. For the first time in my life, my wife and I are leaving our kids for more than like 2 days. My son's almost 11, my daughter's 7. And I gotta admit, it's a really emotional thing. I know we're gonna have an amazing time, my wife and I. I'm not worried about that at all. I mean, I'm nervous going to a country where I speak Spanish, but don't hear it very well. I can read it really well. I definitely don't speak Italian. And the only thing I can do in German is say, "That's good, no," and count to 10 and yell "no" at the top of my lungs. So I've not had that experience before where I don't know the language whatsoever. I mean, at least Spanish I can get around. And that's, all of that is kind of emotional to me, really emotional to me, actually. And that's going to inform this journey that we're about to go on. But definitely after these next 10 days, we'll be gone. I will not be itching to go do this again anytime soon for a couple of different reasons. One, cost. And two, I don't know. I was thinking about this today, and golf has taken me some incredible places. I just came back from Ireland. We're going to talk about that in the back half of this trip, or back half of this show. And obviously getting to do this, getting to do Alaska, the golf's taken me some incredible play. At least the kids got to go to Alaska. That's the adventure of a lifetime. My favorite vacation of all time will be Alaska. But I have this kind of longing to be at home. I don't know how to better put it that way. And I work from home. And that's a strange thing, because there are days where I cannot wait to get out of this house and just want to go do something. Yesterday I went and played 9 holes just because I needed to get out of the house. I needed to do something that wasn't some kind of home repair, wasn't some kind of thing for the job, you know, whatever. And yet I want to be here. And really, I want to be here because my kids are at the ages where they've always been fascinating, but they're really getting to the good part. They're getting to the hard part. And I want to be there for that, because in 10 days, they're going to be different people. It changes that quickly. You might not notice it every day, but if you're gone and you come back, you notice it. And I don't really want to miss lots of that. So the next type of trip like this will be with the kids. So open to suggestions. I'm floating Iceland, maybe around the solstice, and bring some sticks. Play a little bit with my son. My daughter doesn't like to play golf. My wife likes to play. She'd play. But Rose would ride around in the cart. But maybe that's the next adventure. So I'm open to suggestions. You can get a hold of me, Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. You can get a hold of me on Twitter or X, whatever it's called now, Threads, Instagram, at Ryan Ballingy. Happy to talk to you about golf, life, whatever. So, as I mentioned, we're going to Spain. Finca Cortesín is the host for this tournament. It's a biennial event. And you have the 12 Europeans, captained by Suzanne Pedersen. By the way, you have a playing assistant captain in Anna Nordqvist, by the way, which I didn't remember her being named an assistant captain, but I looked over the rosters, and there she is. And then on the American side, you've got Stacey Lewis as the captain. And Stacey Lewis is also going to be the captain next year. So they're going to play this in back-to-back years to get it on an even number cadence. And they're going to have it at Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in Gainesville, Virginia, which is like an hour from my house. So I'm very excited to be able to have an event like that in our area next year. It's going to be really, really cool. But this is my introduction to Solheim Cup in Spain, at least covering it in person. I found that Finca Cortesín, based on everything I've seen from people who are already there, that it's a pretty hilly golf course. It will be a substantial walk for the players. You're going to need a little bit of stamina to get around. And I think that's okay. I think that's part of the challenge of golf, tournament golf, obviously. But the other thing I found really interesting, and I think John Wood is covering this for NBC Sports, part of that coverage is understanding how to play four ball or four sums, alternate shot. Because obviously that's half the 16 team matches. So you need to be able to put together twosomes that feel comfortable playing alternate shot. And interestingly enough, the LPGA went to the American team. Maybe I assume it was yesterday as a practice day, because that's when I saw it. But it could have been the day prior. And asked the players, which do you prefer, foursomes or four ball? And the majority was four ball, but not by as much as I thought. I think that's kind of interesting, because this golf course, John Wood, in his research, and he shared it on Twitter, he's a great follow. If you see what his kind of layout is of the golf course, an ideal alternate shot, right? That ideal doesn't always happen, but an ideal alternate shot, he laid out the case for who you would pick to be the odd hole tee off player and the even hole tee off player, because you don't just pick off the next shot, otherwise then you could kind of game the system, right? So you have someone who tees off on the odds and someone who tees off on the evens. Well, it's really crystal clear that the player who tees off on the odds winds up hitting a lot of short game shots and putts, if that's necessary. So you want your better putter to be the odd hole, and you want your better tee to green player to be your even hole player. So that seems like the pairings are pretty crystal clear then for alternate shot. You might not necessarily just pick a buddy. You're going to pick someone who's a good putter, and then you're going to have someone who's a better just kind of tee to green player. I don't know what those look like yet, and I don't think I've heard a whole lot in the way of those alternate shot pairings. But when you think about it, there aren't many courses like this that are so obvious in terms of which holes players should play in the alternate shot format. Again, also said that there's not always going to be a perfect way of executing this. These are professional golfers, but that doesn't mean they play perfect golf. And if alternate shot, there is a lot of pressure, a lot more pressure. So the only downside to all of this is, okay, let's say you pick a statistically good putter, and I think that's the right play, to tee off on the odd holes. Well, if that's the case, and that good putter doesn't play well, doesn't putt well, for whatever reason, maybe they don't like the looks that they're getting, they just don't see the course very well, they're having a hard time reading the greens, whatever it is, that's extra pressure on that player to perform well in the other shots. Because, yeah, they do hit every other shot. This is a tee-off strategy. So I'm not exactly sure that that is the right way to go about it. Maybe you put out a team out there of equals and say, look, if you both don't putt well, obviously you're going to lose. But if you both putt well, you're going to win. Well, that's That's team match play right then and there. And I'm very curious what Stacey Lewis and Suzanne Pedersen come up with here. Because I know both are informed by the data. Both are informed by how the course is laid out. The opening hole is really interesting. It's a drivable par four because it's normally the fourth hole. But for Solheim, they've made it the first hole. And that's going to be a really cool opener for every match. It's going to really get it off on an interesting foot. So tune in for that. Again, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Starts at 2 a.m. Eastern on Friday on Golf Channel. I think Golf Channel has all of it. And then you know, Friday and Saturday are team matches. Sunday is single Sunday. So you get a little bit of early golf on Friday and Saturday. I assume on Sunday it'll be a little bit different time-wise, maybe a little bit later. But it's absolutely worth a watch. If you want to follow my journey through Spain and covering the event, the coverage will be, the stuff I'll do that's actual, you know, golf journalism and information will be on X or Twitter. And I'll share some pictures, of course. Then on Instagram, I'll do the video, reels, sightseeing, that kind of stuff. And we're going to do a little bit of that in Madrid to start day one, so Thursday. And then Friday, Saturday, part of Sunday will be just at Solheim. And then we fly to Munich on Sunday afternoon and have all day Monday. That'll be at Oktoberfest. That will all be just lots of beer steins. I believe my wife bought me a flannel shirt. Thank God she didn't buy me a lederhosen thing. Big bald dudes don't look good in lederhosen, I don't think. And then Italy the rest of the way. One thing I also wanted to bring up, and it's because I read a really interesting piece on this, two actually, in the last few days. First from Ryan French in Monday Q Info, mondayqinfo.com. Strongly recommend you go and check him out. He used to write for us for a very brief period of time before the folks at Fire Pit Collective offered him a salary. We were going to do what he's doing now, which was membership model, and they offered him a salary, and it worked out great for him for a time, but ultimately Fire Pit has kind of become a much more condensed operation and doesn't do quite as much. So Ryan went back out on his own and he's doing great. I mean, he's still doing all the great content he's always done. That's built him a following. That's really interesting. Yes. It's riddled with grammatical errors and stuff like that. That doesn't mean anything. The information is great and you can support him. I think it's $50 a year to be a member at mondayqinfo.com. While I would love for you to be a member of Golf News Net for $99 a year, and I will never turn that down. We also have a membership for much less just to kind of get a ads-free approach to our site. But I would right now much rather you go support Ryan French. So he did this story. And then Brentley Romine from Golf Channel did a similar story and following up on it with a different spin on it. And they're both worth reading. But Ryan came out first with it about the controversy in college golf. Now, typically, we don't talk college golf on the show, but it's an intersection of things that I find very interesting. So, for the longest time in college golf, there was this website called GolfStat, and it still exists. And it was the gold standard for entering scores, live scoring, college program rankings that basically the NCAA used straight down the tube to get the fields for NCAA regionals all set. And they've been working with the NCAA, been working with GolfStat for basically 35 years unabated. And that was at the national level. And then individual programs and their tournaments that they run, they could pick whatever they wanted. But by and large, people picked GolfStat because it was created and updated for college golf for its different formats and rules. Five players count four, six players count five, team match play, team stroke play. There's all kinds of different formats that get played in college golf tournaments that you don't see week to week in professional golf. And GolfStat managed that very well. Now, there were qualms about it, right? It was kind of a Spartan website. There's not a whole lot of features to it. There's not a lot of glitz and glam. The ranking system is always a subject of qualms for any coach. And there are other ranking systems out there, the Sagarin system that Golf Week runs. No system is perfect, so there were going to be complaints about that. But along came former UCLA men's golf coach Derek Freeman. And Derek Freeman decided rather abruptly in the 21-22 season that he was going to resign his post as the UCLA coach. And the rumor mill kind of started that he was getting involved in something that was going to compete with Golfstat. And then kind of out of nowhere, Golfstat is told there's going to be competition for the contract that they have with the NCAA around score entry rankings and stuff like that. And there's an RFP, and this comes after a 1-year extension. There used to be multi-year extensions, a 1-year extension between the NCAA and Golfstat. Meanwhile, Golfstat, which has been a family-owned and operated business, you know, they've got, 10, 15 employees at the time. Both their founder and the founder's son, who took over the company, both wind up dying from ALS in a 5-year time span. Very tragic. And the matriarch of the family continues to run the business because that's what they've always done. They're informed that through the RFP process that the NCAA has come up with a new partner, and that partner is called Spikemark. And Spikemark turns out to be Derek Freeman's firm. Apparently, Spikemark impressed the NCAA with the presentation of how they were going to rank players, how they were going to offer more transparency around the ranking, how scores could be input, how tournaments could be managed, all these different things that were common critiques of Golfstat. And so they award him the contract, even though the product isn't finished. There's a demo, but not really a workable demo of the live score entry and stuff like that. And that contract starts with this season. The season starts in the fall. Obviously, the big stuff happens in the spring of 24 when you get to regionals, nationals. And that's really what the contract is for with the NCAA. But Golfstat provided a ranking system. Spikemark was going to do the same. And so that ranking system would inform a lot of things. It could inform invitations to tournaments. It could inform how players get into PGA Tour University rankings, to the World Amateur Golf Ranking. It informs a lot of things. And from the start, basically, of this season, just a few weeks ago, Spikemark has been a disaster. It was unproven. It has not worked well. The company has claimed cyber attack, which there's a lot of skepticism about that. That has basically limited the ability to run tournaments. There's no live scoring available, which upsets a lot of people. A lot of tournaments so far have gone back to Golfstat instead of Spikemark. They get a refund for that because they want to be able to show live scoring to parents and kids and run it more efficiently and get that data out to the partners that need it. And there's this big kind of controversy about how the NCAA could award such a contract. And we're not talking huge amounts of money. This isn't millions of dollars. And we're not talking a lot. I mean, the refunds that people are asking for are like $500. So we're not talking insane money here. But to award a contract to a net new provider, I mean, totally new, basically force Golfstat to shed its entire workforce, albeit, you know, like 10, 15 people. But that affects a lot of lives there. And then find out the product doesn't work properly and that the old solution really wasn't that bad. But now where do you go from here? Because you have all of these tournaments and they're going to pile up because there's a fall season, obviously, and they keep running. There's 30 tournaments that are already lined up to be on Golfstat. Some have gone to a platform called Blue Golf, which you might have seen. You've probably used Golf Genius. USGA uses them. That's a popular platform. There are a bunch out there, probably a handful of relevant golf tournament management platforms, including Spikemark and Golfstat. And now all of these college coaches, knowing that there's a non-functional product that they signed up for, are scrambling to use whatever service they need. Some have used just Google Sheets, just good old-fashioned manual entry, which stinks for players, coaches, parents, everybody involved, because then it's hard to do live scoring. And the end of kind of where we are now with it is Spike Mark is supposed to provide an update this week on where they are. They don't know when they're going to have live scoring ready. They're going to have to back enter the results of all of the tournaments that will be held without them, because college coaches ain't going to do that. And they shouldn't have to do that because of the contract that they signed with Spike Mark. So it's this really awkward situation for a product that doesn't seem that difficult. Again, in past life, I used to work in IT, used to do IT project management. I can code a pretty good amount. I mean, I'm not the best coder in the world, but I can get myself out of my jams. I do my own coding. And this is just relational database stuff. This is not tricky. There's obviously a front-facing UI where you're going to enter the scores. You have an app. They had an app developed for iPhone. They didn't have one for Android. So if you had a group of players playing in Android, they just had to write down their scores. They couldn't use an app because there wasn't one for them. And there wasn't a functional website, which should have been the first thing. A functional website with a invitation code that you could randomly generate that manages the groups. You could have done that very easily and you would have saved yourself a whole lot of heartache. But now you've got this big mess of a situation, and the people at Spike Mark, and I know they're trying to do the right thing, but they've got a big mess on their hands. And now they've got to figure out how to make this tech solution work. It seems like they hired the wrong people on the back end. Whoever they hired to do the development of this failed massively. It's not that hard to do. And ultimately, they've got to get this solved ASAP. And ASAP could be this week, could be next month. Derek Freeman's thrown out January. That would be months and months of tournaments without data, without rankings, without really any idea, where the NCAA, through a proxy, effectively sees teams. It stinks. It just stinks. I would highly recommend reading both Ryan's story at Monday Q Info. Brentley did a good follow, talked with Derek Freeman for a fair amount, and kind of got his view on it. And that's at golfchannel.com. No longer exists. You can go to golfchannel.com. They'll send you nbcsports.com and check out their golf section. They killed golfchannel.com, which, okay, whatever. I just thought that was very fascinating. It's something that I don't understand how that can be possible, but here it is. So I wanted to bring that to your attention, just something a little bit different that we talk about. And I think it's something we don't appreciate enough, because most of us focus on professional golf, either as fans or as people who cover the sport. And at the end of the day, the college level, it ain't anything like that. It's a small community. There's a lot of funky formats. You need a good solution that works. There's no centralized group that runs every tournament. So there's a lot of moving pieces that need to be rectified there. And hopefully it'll be rectified soon. We'll go ahead and take a break. We'll come back right after this. All right. Let's talk about the second half of the Ireland trip. So we last left off, we were in County Wicklow, we played the European Club, and interestingly enough, we did the first part of a wrap-up podcast with myself, Brendan Sweeney, who was on the trip with me, my partner in crime, and Tiernan Byrne from Club Choice Ireland, who put together the itinerary, played with us most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, and just did an incredible job. And if you want to check out his firm, which is clubchoiceireland.com, you can go onto their website. You can get an idea of some of the tours they put together. Everything is custom. They will put together an itinerary based on where you want to play, if you have that in mind, what you want to experience, your group size, all that. So check them out at clubchoiceireland.com. But wanted to pick up the second half of the trip, final three rounds that we had. So we, like I said in the prior episode, we wound up seeing probably 8 or 10 different towns in total, right? So, you know, we're in County Wicklow for European Club, and we go to have the soul food, you know, the Irish soul food, basically a traditional Irish food that we had on the roadside, and then we drive back down to Wexford Town. There's a County Wexford and Wexford Town, and we're in Wexford Town, this place called Clayton White's Hotel. It's kind of like a real, it's almost like a Hilton, maybe like a really nice Marriott, really nice hotel, beautiful views of the city from where we were. It was exceptionally hot in terms of Irish weather, so their aircon, as they call it, air conditioning, it is not meant to go super low. Like 72 degrees is the most it cools down to, and we needed something a little bit better than that, but that's okay. We made it. We're fine. But incredible views of the water. It's a fishing town. And we come back and go out that night, go to a couple different bars, and wound up meeting a dude from the Netherlands and talk about fishing for a while. We went and saw his huge fishing boat. I've never seen a fishing boat really like that big, like a commercial fishing boat up close. And there were a whole bunch parked along the docks, you know, docked up, ready for the next morning in Wexford. Just a beautiful little town, really cool little waterfront area. Nice place to be. And this was probably like the third or fourth time that someone came up to Brendan or myself and said, "Hey, it sounds like you're from America," and then start talking to us. And a fascinating conversation developed about where the U.S. is. People really love to want to talk politics with Americans. They can't get over the Trump thing, or that Biden's old, or how things don't work. You know, that it's very interesting to hear the Irish perspective, what they see and what they've thought about America, and then try to process all of that and explain how you might see things. And you and I might have a very different explanation, and that's totally okay. But to then have that conversation, it was great. It is really one of the highlights of these types of trips, and especially this one, to just be able to go into a bar, order a pint, 2, 10, whatever, and just talk with people. And it wasn't always about America. It could have been about anything. We talked about sports. We talked about travel. We talked about family. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And it was great. So we got to see a whole bunch. We got to see 2 or 3 different bars in Wexford. And then, so we had the first night after we played European Club. So we were there 2 nights, and then we had a bunch of one-hitters in terms of hotel nights. And we spent the night after European Club, and then the next day we went to Ross Lair. And Tiernan came and picked us up in the morning. We went to Ross Lair, and Ross Lair is his club. It's in his town where he lives. I mean, he's been there for years. And the pride factor was a little bit different, I think, for Tiernan to be able to take us to his club. Because, you know, we're somewhat discerning golfers. We've seen a lot of places, right? I had the good fortune to play some incredible places in my life. And I feel this way when I have people, I host people where I play golf, where I'm a member. And you want them to like it. You want them to see what you see where you play, the highs and the lows. But you want them to see that you play somewhere worth playing. And man, Ross Lair was cool. So Ross Lair is a member club, so not a proprietary owned thing. You be a member, you pay annual dues, and you pay fees to play. And they were going to have, and they were in the process of aerating, because they had a good weather pattern. They wanted to get an aeration in, help clear up the organic material under the turf, build healthy turf for the fall, et cetera, et cetera. So that we knew that on the like 7th tee, 8th tee, on the first round at County Louth. And Tiernan tells us about that. And we're like, oh, well, you know, that's okay. No worries. And we just figured we weren't going to play golf. Like, we were just going to scratch it, because that window came open pretty quickly. And it's okay. We weren't going to be mad. And Tiernan said, no. They're going to do us a favor and leave the last 6 holes untouched. We'll drive over there. We'll play the last 6 holes. And then you'll at least get a flavor for the course. So we went there. We're the only people there because the course is closed, right? And we wind up meeting Mark Boyle. And he is the groundskeeper there. And he's like, yeah, you go out. We left the last 6, 7 holes open for you. Go out, have a great time. And when you get into the parking lot, you can't really see what you're about to see. There's a couple trees. It's not really exactly clear where you are, what you're going to do. I mean, you can see the first tee pretty clearly from the parking lot. It's a nice little, like, 360-yard dogleg left, simple-looking hole. And then you kind of see what turns out to be the 18th green, which is a par 5 that plays back toward the first tee box close enough. So we get in the cart. We have carts to drive out there. And we drive out, and just immediately you can tell this place is special. There's, you know, dune space, right, covering the whole area between the golf course and the beach / ocean. And you start to see over that, and you realize just how special a land you're sitting on. There's a public beach access, so people can take a walk basically through the golf course if they stay on the walk access and go to the beach. We saw that a couple of times. But Ross Lair, place opened in 1905. Just a really, really fun everyday golf course. You would be happy to play forever. It plays kind of sideways, you know, parallel to the water, pretty much out and back kind of thing. It's not all out and back, but pretty much out and back. So you have a little crisscross and some of the holes, but basically you're kind of playing in a figure eight. And they have 18-hole main course, and then they have a 12-hole short course that they put in. And so we played from 12 through 18, and then we wound up actually playing number 10. Yeah, I think it was 10, par 3. And while we were waiting for Mark to come out, because they hadn't worked on the hole yet. They hadn't done the punch marks, and they hadn't done the aeration. So then we played the 12 through 18, and then Tiernan's like, hey, I want you guys to come play one hole with me on the short course. And I believe it's the 8th hole. And it's this par 3, like 120 yards. And I'll be damned if it wasn't as good as being able to play at Pebble Beach on number 7. Not the big downhill drop. I mean, it's pretty flat in terms of your little elevated tee. But from that little elevated tee, there's water on three sides. It's incredibly beautiful. One of my favorite pictures of the trip. Lasting memories. Kind of climb up on the dune. You can kind of look around and see everything. The green is not very large. I mean, it is a true postage stamp, or at least it looks that way from the tee. You know, it's a little pitching wedge, maybe a little punch 9-iron, depending on the wind. Tiernan said he's hit as much as like a 6-iron in and hit as little as a, you know, sand wedge in. But just a great little par 3. Really cool little piece of heaven. And to be able to play this course, which had a really great mixture of 3s, 4s, and 5s, good lengths on the different holes, different green sizes and looks, fair amount of bunkering, plenty of land movement, different strategy, had to hit it left, had to hit it right, could hit it straight. Just really, really cool golf course. And it was, again, so special to be able to play it with Tiernan, to play his place. Because I'm sure I know that he does. He brings a lot of tour groups through and brings a lot of revenue to the club because of that. But the pride that he had about the place was just really cool. And I didn't buy a lot of merch on this trip. I bought a bucket hat from County Louth because I had a really cool red stripe. That all my bucket hats have blue or green stripes. Never had a red one. So red spoke to me. And then I bought a new putter cover from Ross Lair. And those were the two things I bought. And the reason I bought that putter cover is because I wanted to remember how that connection, you know, that the importance of being able to rep where you're from or where you play. And I'll keep that connection for a long, long time. So golf course was really enjoyable, a whole lot of fun, very fair. I mean, you could wind up in some gnarly stuff, but it was hard to kind of, I mean, you could keep it in play pretty easily. Green complexes were great, ran at a good speed, and you were never more than 100 yards away from just running up on top of a dune and looking at the water. And apparently because of the United Kingdom leaving the EU, there are a lot more boats that are coming into New Ross, which is a port town just kind of down the shoreline. and some of Tiernan's customers actually take a ferry from the UK, and it's like a 3-hour ferry. They're on their car. You know, they have their car. They get off, and there's still a free entry into the country from that. So you come in, you enter, you're in your car, you're ready to roll. So a lot of their tour groups do that. Obviously, we can't do that from the States, but I thought that was really cool that people can just go, hey, I'm going to get on the ferry. 3 hours later, you're good to go, and you're driving to your golf course. So really, really cool. I really, really like that. I really like that town. That was pretty cool. And then we spent some time. We went to spend some time in a town nearby, and we get to see the what they're called a replica famine ship. So there was at the time of the potato famine, a company that was doing import export. So they would go to the United States or Canada, and they get, you know, lumber or fruit or whatever, load it up and bring it back. And then they go back to America. Well, they realized with all these empty legs and people that wanted to escape Ireland, they could transport people from Ireland to the States. And a lot of them went to Savannah, Georgia. So if you've ever been to Savannah, Georgia, there's a big connection between Savannah and Ireland. And that I did not know about, but that we went on a replica of the ship. They had like couple actors come on to talk about the different classes on the ship. Like first class got a cabin. Regular class was like $2, $3 for a 6-week journey, which was obviously a lot of money at the time, like a month or 2 month salary. But it was a horror show to go over there. That's how bad things had gotten, that people were willing to get on a boat for 6 weeks, be in darkness for 22, 23 hours a day, get next to no food, live in squalor with rats and all kinds of just horrible conditions to escape Ireland at the time. And I think that kind of put into perspective kind of how America is a country of immigrants, and we just think, okay, we're a country of immigrants, people come here. But the depths of which people were escaping at different points in history to come here for whatever reason and are still doing, I think puts into perspective what kind of beacon the United States can be. And that was just kind of a really grounding moment. So we play there, and then we wind up going to this place called Hook, which is kind of down the coastline. I mean, we're talking like super bottom southeast Ireland. And Hook is the site for the oldest continuously running lighthouse, still operational. It was built in the 1200s, and it's you know, now very different, obviously. Still functional, but all done remotely via LED lights. I mean, there's a whole system for it now. But to be able to climb to the top of that and just see, I mean, people used to live in this thing for hundreds of years. I mean, even up until like the 1970s, I think, something like that. But people were living in this lighthouse, and it has, you know, two floors with like a bedroom, a living room, a couple fireplaces. And you get to the top and just this just mind-blowing view of the sea. And I'm so glad that we took that little journey, because it just kind of opened up to another part of Ireland. And again, I will underscore in everything that we did, go into towns, go to places like that. Hundreds of thousands of people visit the Hook Lighthouse every year. It is absolutely worth doing. Even if you didn't even go in the lighthouse, just to see that drive, you know, farmland left and right, homes, water, the view across the kind of bay that's there, the history associated with it, William Marshall, kind of one of the few people that was kind of the proxy king, just really just an interesting story, and having a great tour guide absolutely helped too. So again, another one of those kind of heritage things. And I know that there are plenty of people listening to this who are like, I don't care about history. I don't want to see any of that. I just want to play the golf. I cannot recommend enough that you get away from the golf course. And I'm one of those people who really, after like 3 or 4 rounds of golf in a row, I'm good. Like, I don't need any more golf. But I do need to see the place I am. not just go from golf course to golf course, hotel to hotel, resort to resort. You can do that anywhere. You can do that in Iowa. You can't do that in Ireland. I don't think you're doing yourself a service if you do that, or anywhere foreign if you do that. So just keep that in mind. So we have two rounds of golf left, and it's at this point it gets real, because Tiernan's got a couple of things he's got to manage. He's got family. He's got kids. And he's got to take care of that, be a dad, take them to practices, or they call it training, you know, where they're working on their sports, hurling and Gaelic football. And so we have the car that we've been in, and now it's Brendan's turn to drive. Holy shit. I'd heard about Irish Roads. If you've ever watched any kind of American in a Foreign Land comedy, you know, the driving thing scares the crap out of people. It's for good reason. Some of the Irish highway system is vastly improved over the last 20 years. The whole Celtic Tiger thing meant a lot of highway style roads, or kind of 2 and 3 lane roads at good speeds, were built. And that's great. Getting from like big place to big place is easy. It's once you get off the freeway that then things get a little tricky, because the roads are narrow. They truly are narrow. And if you've never driven on the left side of the road, you can't appreciate the blind spots that you just don't think about as an American when you're driving in the passenger, you know, as the driver on the left side instead of the driver on the right side. Also, with the roads being narrow, I think a lot of Irish drivers have come to figure out when they kind of expect to break into big curves, but there are just some roads that are naturally narrow, and it is a rural country. I mean, there's a lot of farm work being done this time of year when we're there, a lot of crops being harvested and a lot of just work being done in the fields. So there are these enormous, enormous farm vehicles that are riding alongside of you, and they are wide and kind of make, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times we went, oh shit. And thought, you know, this was it. So be prepared to drive in the grass. Be prepared to just hit the brake and let someone go by. Irish drivers, some of them are a little bit like Florida drivers. They'll just go around you, and it's okay. Let them go around you. I think Brendan may have been scarred for a while doing the driving, but he did a great job. We didn't get in any accidents. Just take your time. So when you're traveling from place to place, if you're going 30 miles, it might seem like that's something you can do in 20 minutes in the States if you've got freeway. That is not the case. You need to budget time. So Google Maps is your friend. Our car had Android Auto, so we had maps to everywhere. Android Auto maps is not the best in Ireland. It's not as detailed. So some of the things are a little bit confusing. So take your time when you're going to these places. So we wound up leaving Wexford and Clayton White's, and then we went up to Mount Juliet. And that was our first parkland course. So we have two parkland courses back to back. And Mount Juliet, really nice resort, kind of old, like a bunch of places kind of in Ireland or old estates that are turned into resorts. And this one you went through kind of a very different set of scenic, bucolic land than we had so far, where a lot of that was seaside driven. This was country. I mean, there was rivers and streams everywhere, which was amazing. Farmland, valleys, up and down. Little town that we drove through that was beautiful. Had a little traffic jam in it, which was kind of interesting. But beautiful place. And then you get up to Mount Juliet. Mount Juliet's a Jack Nicklaus design. It's hosted a couple of World Golf Championships. Tiger won there. Ernie Els won there. Had some Irish Opens. Had the Irish Open last year. And it's an accomplished place in terms of competitive Irish golf. The resort is beautiful. The golf course is lovely. The staff is very, very nice. I think it's kind of a slow burn golf course, kind of like Port Marnock links, where like the first two holes are kind of okay. They're fine. They're short little par three or fours. You get to a par three over water, the third hole, and you're like, okay, that's pretty cool. That's a nice jumping in point. Par four, short par four, tight landing area. And then it kind of starts to pick up from there, and it kind of builds up toward like 12 and 13. 13 is the first hole where you're, in my opinion, really like, okay, this is really cool. There's a good kind of mid-length par four, second shot all over water. It's not like hundreds of yards of water, but over water. You got to get over water. Next hole's a par three, really cool scenic, and then it kind of finishes from there. I think if you've played Jack Nicklaus courses, this is a knock on Jack Nicklaus, not on Mount Julia. You know what's in the bag. You know the tricks. The 10th hole is a split decision par five where if you're aggressive, you can kind of go one way. If you lay up, you go completely another. And you can make an eagle with the shorter route, but if you take the safe route, you might find a bunker. Then you got to lay up. So there's, you see, like that hole exists here in the D.C. area, Potomac Shores, which is not my favorite place, but I've played there. And that's kind of the problem with Jack Nicklaus, is he's done hundreds of courses. Most of them have this, they borrow from the same playbook. Eventually, you're going to repeat yourself. But the place is very well manicured. They have a really awesome practice facility with Top Tracer, cool academy. It's just kind of a nice upscale place. We did not stay there. We didn't have lunch there either. We wound up then going from there into Kilkenny, Hotel Kilkenny. And I cannot recommend Kilkenny enough. Man, that was a fun place to be. So Kilkenny's pretty close to the water. Not right there, but fairly close to the water. But it was kind of a medieval capital. And so we're staying there for the night. And a lot of people are kind of coming through the town or tourists. They want to see just what kind of a medieval town looked like. Obviously now in modern form and has evolved over many, many centuries. And you kind of start. So we wind up going into the downtown and get a walking tour from Shenanigans Walking Tours. And it was really cool to be able to take this walking tour, to understand the history of what happened in different landmarks that kind of defined this town, but also kind of defined a lot of phrases that we use in English and the explanation behind them. You know, social standing, upper crust, all kinds of different stuff like that, where you get the explanation, you're like, oh, I get it. Like, I get why we use that phrase now. And as a word geek, that really made me excited. And then to be able to just see different points of interest in terms of history, really kind of powerful moment. There's a monastery that was there, a church that was there. Oliver Cromwell comes through with his armies in the war when they got rid of the monarchy temporarily, right? And he comes in and destroys a wing of this church. It's still there today. And go in and there's just this incredible stained glass wall. There's a statue that they found inside the church from like the 1200s or so it's inscribed. Might even be sooner than that. And just kind of moments like that of, all right, this is what you're stepping, this is what was here. This is what's going to be here. This was stepping through history, quite literally. That was really cool. Again, I know a lot of people will probably go, I'm not particularly interested in that. And that's okay, but I would strongly recommend that you do that because it gives you a flavor for the history and why the town is what it is now and how it's evolved over time. Very walkable place. Lots of fun places to go eat and drink. We wound up at a place called Sullivan's. So there was competing breweries in Kilkenny. Smithwick's is from Kilkenny. That ultimately gets bought by Diageo, the people who now own Guinness too and a bunch of other stuff. And they shut down the Smithwick's brewery tour kind of thing, and they eventually brought it back because there was a lot of clamoring about it. But the people at Sullivan's, they were kind of the rival, and the family that owned the Sullivan's name, they wind up bringing it back as a brewery, like an independent brewery. So we went to the first place that I would consider, a microbrewery place in Kilkenny. It was awesome. It was really cool. It was kind of like the Irish spin on it was really cool. The beer was very good. The pizza was great. By the way, pizza in Ireland, underrated piece of it. We had some good pieces of pie in Ireland. And take that journey through Kilkenny. Spend the night, went to a bar. I forget the name of it. I have a picture of it. But went in, there was a guy who was playing guitar, but kind of had like a synthesizer to play the background of a bunch of songs. We were playing country music, old school rock, just singing, blasting, having a great time. And we wind up walking back, and that was our one night in Kilkenny. Again, highly recommend it. Have a great time there. You could bar hop all night, and you wouldn't get tired. It was a really cool, walkable town. Absolutely worth it. So then we go to our last round of golf that we play, and that was Druids Glen. So we're staying at Druids Glen for that night. We drive over there. We were playing at Druids Glen Golf Club, which is a little bit down the street, different place. And it's billed to us as the Augusta of Ireland. And my first thought is, nothing's Augusta. Augusta's Augusta. But come to find out, this place has been renovated. Wound up talking with the general manager, who was a great guy. And we get out a little bit later because we wound up having lunch and just having a fun conversation. And there's a great group of like 12 or 16 English women who came over on a girls' trip to play golf, which was really cool. We had fun talking to them, and they were really enjoying being at Druids Glen like for 3 or 4 days. So we wind up teeing off, and we come to find out it's another Pat Reddy design. Pat Reddy did European Club. This he did here in part. He did the original design, and the redesign was recently, like 2 months ago, unveiled for people to start playing. New ownership had taken over. They put a bunch of money into the course, took out like 68 bunkers. Pat Reddy loves punishing golfers. They took out a bunch of bunkers, make it a little bit more playable, and they did a great job of the redo. I mean, some of the new holes, there was, I think, two new holes, but one looked just like Augusta once you got out to the fairway. Just a landing area, almost like 11 at Augusta National. Just a beautiful hole, and beautiful shot after beautiful shot after beautiful shot. Great, great golf course. Very, very fun. If it were on the ocean, it would be a top 15 course in the world kind of thing. And the knock on it is, of course, Americans come over and they want to play links golf. There is plenty of great parkland golf in Ireland. And this was one of those things you couldn't recreate. It's, Nicklaus, because he's everywhere in America. Pat Reddy is not. And I've really come to appreciate the versatility of his architecture. So next time I go back, I might want to go find some more Pat Reddy stuff. And there's a couple others that could be included on that list. But just a phenomenal golf course. Great people, great service, easy to get around, quick round, easy to play. Not an easy golf course, don't get me wrong. But the par threes were incredible. Probably the best set of par threes I've played in a long time in terms of just kind of over the top. And I kind of compared it to like playing Wing Golf Club or Shadow Creek in that it clearly golf is not natural when it looks like that. But man, it's so pretty. You just have to appreciate it. There were a couple of par threes very reminiscent of Augusta National in different ways. And that obviously was by design, hence the tagline. But beautiful water features, really great landing areas, great shadowing, great just agronomy, planting, cool stuff. There's an Island Green par 3 that we skunked it up really bad on. It was the next last hole. And then a par 5 to finish that was a really good little risk-reward hole. Water, kind of a little stream in front, a little stream to the right of the green that made you think a little bit before hitting that second shot or third shot in. And an excellent golf course. Just an excellent, fun golf course. And I would happily go back and play anytime, put it on any trip with any set of links courses you want to add. If I were going to recommend a parkland based on what we saw, I would not hesitate to say go play Druids Glen. The hotel was very nice. We had a really nice dinner there. Just kind of hung out at the bar, reflecting on 6 days in a row of golf. And got the night in there, and Tiernan was back with us, so he came and joined us for the back half of the round at Druids Glen, stays the night with us, he takes the car back, thank God for Brendan for that, and we're driving up back toward Dublin for the Irish Open, and we had gotten credentialed for the DP World Tour. This is my first DP World Tour event, never been to a DP World Tour event. Interestingly enough, when I got out of college, I kind of done this podcast for a while, And for whatever reason, I could get credentials to some tournaments. The then European Tour gave me a credential to do the Nissan Irish Open. Ultimately, I didn't get my act together in time to get my passport and wound up going to Vegas instead. Could not be more different. But then, almost 20 years later, I get to cover that tournament I wanted to cover. That was really cool. So we go to the K Club. Again, K Club is, I would say most clubs in Ireland, there's no pretentiousness. It's just, we are this club. And, you know, we have these members. K Club's a little bit different, a little bit ritzier, a little bit more metropolitan kind of club. And there are a couple of those. And I don't mean that in a bad way. They have another court. They have 36 holes. They have 18 that hosted this tournament and the Ryder Cup, what, like 17 years ago. But they also had a different course that was a little bit easier and another clubhouse that was much more laid back. They had a basement in the big clubhouse that was, again, kind of a little bit meant to be fun. So you could have what you want. You could be, you know, point your nose up. You could just have a good time with your mates. But the Irish Open was great. It was really cool. I mean, the support was wonderful. K Club was an, I did not know what to expect as a golf course. Again, another parkland where you go, oh, parkland, Ireland, bleh. But Arnold Palmer probably did his best work in Ireland between here and Tralee. Just really, really fun golf course. Good, challenging test. It's a golf course you wouldn't necessarily find in America, although I started thinking about kind of drawing comparisons to, speaking of Jack Nicklaus, to Muirfield Village. There were a lot of kind of inspiration points I saw there that I thought were very interesting. But the tournament was super well run. Crowds were respectful. They cheered on. They were huge, by the way. They were sold out, I think, through the weekend. We obviously were there just the round for Thursday. But we got to spend time in the clubhouse. Got to talk to some members of the club that were very, very proud of what their club was accomplishing that week, which was really cool. The club had changed ownership in recent memory, so ownership was very, very excited about it. Just a cool experience. They do things slightly different on the DP World Tour from a fan experience standpoint. They had like the fan village that Liv likes to talk about as their innovation. That Irish Open's been doing that for like 10 years. It was cool. It was really cool. It was just different and yet extremely familiar. So I'm glad that we ended the trip seeing people who knew what they were doing playing golf instead of us trying to guess. Absolutely worth it. The one thing I will say about that day and really the whole trip, and I think I said this in the last one, if not, I'm going to double underscore it now. Pack for everything. Pack for anything that can happen. So I presume because of the weather forecast on my app, the Weather Channel app, 65 during the day, 55 at night, everywhere we went, 40% chance of rain every day, and all those things can be true. But instead we got 75, the last day was 80, sunny, no rain, warm, and it felt warmer in 75 degree Irish heat than even like 85 degree Maryland heat. So even if you think, particularly in the summer months, it's not going to be hot, bring some shorts. Just bring like two pairs of shorts, golf shorts. Because I basically wore the athletic shorts I am wearing now while recording this for 4 days in a row because it was just too darn hot. And fortunately, courses were cool with that. But be prepared. Bring some golf shorts or you're going to buy some. And that can happen too. So underscore all of that. I cannot tell you how grateful I am to have had this adventure. Brendan called me in January. He's like, hey, do you want to go do this? And it was an absolute yes for me. And fortunately, that wasn't a scheduling problem. Tiernan was incredible. We just had such a great time. And yeah, I'll remember the golf. I'll remember the things that we saw. But kind of like most things, you remember what you felt. You remember what you enjoyed, what made you smile and happy. And the golf was a huge part of that. The heritage stuff was a huge part of that. But it was the people. It's always the people. It's the conversations. It's the beers. It's the food. It's the what you talk about, what you get into. And eventually, you spend 5, 6, 7 days in a row with someone, you get past the surface and you start talking about reality. You start talking about life and goals and your family and get emotional about things. My son is named after the Carrickery Rope Bridge in Northern Ireland. His name's Carrick. It's a Gaelic for rock. We have family members named Rocco and Rocky It was a cool tie-in. And we were in Sullivan's, or outside Sullivan's, I should say. And Brendan and I were talking, and I was trying to call up video chat with the kids and my wife, and did that, and then just got super emotional. I mean, like, I was crying, not like ready to cry, like not trying to cry in a public place, but it was coming out and just trying to block it. And I can't wait for the day that I can take Carrick to his bridge. We have a photo of it on the wall in my bedroom. He knows exactly what it looks like. And I can't wait to see him cross it. And that's, yes, the place, but it's the person. And when those two things come together, great people and great places, really cool stuff happens. So whether you choose to go to Ireland or Northern Ireland or down your street, whatever, I will always say that it is, you got to go with the right people. You can make anything kind of out of a place. But Ireland is an incredibly special place. It holds a really special place in my heart. I can't wait to go back someday. Go with my children. Let them experience what I have been able to experience a couple of different times in different ways. And it if you haven't done it, do it. Get your passport, get your global entry, get your kids their passports, play golf or not. Go experience a place like Ireland. It'll change you a little bit. It'll change you a little bit for the better. And the things that you'll think of when you think back on it. I mean, I still think about my trip to Ireland with my wife when we were getting ready to have kids. I still think about those kinds of things. I'm going to think about this trip for a long time. Again, people that we met, places we saw. I'll forget all the golf shots. I will. Except for that 90-foot putt I made at County Louth. I'll never forget that. But everything else I'll probably forget. And it'll still be the best memory. And it'll be totally worth it. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Thanks so much for spending time with us. I appreciate it. If you want to check us out, our coverage of the Solheim Cup and Ryder Cup, head over to golfnewsnet.com. We'll do podcasts. We'll do two of the first. From there, we'll do our betting show, The Press, as well. Get those wherever you get your podcasts or on GNN Radio, available on iHeart and TuneIn. We'll be back with another show next week. Probably talk a little bit about the Solheim Cup from Oktoberfest, which would be pretty exciting. And then we'll talk about the Ryder Cup the week after. Thank you so much for your time and support. I'm Ryan Balaji. We'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.